Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Humat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, I feel great.
Yes, great. We're supposed to be professionals here.
Why?
The show has started.
Oh,
the show has started. Cut it out. Good morning. Good morning. I actually woke up this morning. Actually, before going to bed last night, okay. I couldn't wait till this morning. And
was it that bad last night?
No. It was just
had
great.
To get it over with.
No, life is so freaking good. But we're going to talk about that today here on Leading Edge Medicine because you gave me some information that just broke my heart a few minutes ago. And
he's pointing to her, by the way. You can't see his finger pointing on the radio, but that's who he's talking to.
Yes. And we're gonna talk about that because we're seeing a pattern, and we're gonna talk about that pattern in a minute. But in the meantime, we've got Dr. Jerry Mixon obviously rudely interrupting the introduction of the show and not paying any attention to what we're supposed to be doing.
I was paying attention to what he said, which is, you know, your body and your brain. And I was pointing out that my brain is part of my body.
Yes.
They're not two separate creatures.
He's feisty this morning, Pete.
I've been fighting with AT&T for an hour and a half, almost 2 hours this morning. So I'm okay. In a feisty mood.
Yes, right. yes. TMI, I think. But that's all right. If you have a question. Mm-hmm. For Dr. Mixon or for Dr. Samara Humat, you just call us. Here's the number. Many of you have it tattooed on your left wrist. It's 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770.
You realize that you just made a horrible reference.
Why?
What?
Well, you have just said something that was connected to the old Nazi regimes.
Ooh.
The tattoos on the left forearm was what they did for the concentration camp folks.
Crazy.
and according to the cancel culture, you are now beyond the pale and no one can ever speak to you again.
Okay. That might be good. 800-465-8770. Okay. Several things that are just top of our list here.
Mm-hmm.
The one that bothered me so much, Dr. Humat, was what you had said about loneliness.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that mm-hmm. because this pandemic has done more than affected our physical health.
Yes. Yeah, no, I started by saying that this whole week I've heard so many patients express their frustration, and it's not just their frustration. Actually, they're sad. They're depressed, they're anxious, and they're losing sleep. And it's all because partly they're affected by the pandemic. Their ability to socialize normally, exercise normally, work normally, and every aspect and every sphere of their life has been impacted. Even if they're not impacted by it financially, you know, even if they're financially secure and they're okay, they're still affected by it.
Yeah.
And it is affecting their ability to do things and to be. And so that was a huge deal this whole week, call after call after call and person after person. I was really sad to see that impact on everybody. So and I kept thinking that if it's my small population of patients that are expressing that, think about the global impact. It is impacting on so many other people, working moms, trying to keep it together from home and trying to teach their kids in at home and not giving them too much screen time and juggle a job and, you know, in small quarters, living quarters with so many distractions. It's got to be affecting a lot of people.
It has. In fact, in people under 25, it's over 20% of the population under age 25 that are expressing suicidal ideation.
Yes.
During the pandemic.
Yes, over the course of the last several months.
Right.
And it's getting worse as time goes
Say
on.
That is a horribly scary statistic. Yes. Say it again.
It's over 20% of people under 25. Now, this is normally should be the most optimistic, forward-looking,
yes,
I can accomplish anything. I'm bulletproof,
yes,
part of the
right
population.
That's right.
And 20-plus percent of them are expressing suicidal ideation.
Yeah.
And now, that doesn't mean they're all going to try to off themselves, but it means they at least are thinking about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, at 23, 24 years old, you should be thinking that you can
sure
conquer the world.
That's
Nothing
right
can stop me.
That's
I can
right
do it all.
That's right.
And here they are thinking about dying because, you know, they're socially isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And that explains in large measure, by the by, why the young kids, the college student population, are totally ignoring their social distancing when they go off to college. They're away from
right
their parents. They're away from their authority figures. And they're gathering in massive groups, and nobody's wearing masks.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're getting new COVID hotspots because mm-hmm they're in an absolute emotional meltdown.
Yeah.
They will not follow the government instructions anymore. They're just,
you know,
not going to do it.
Our good friend Rajiv Nagaj,
yes,
with Aging Options, he has. It's a big part of what he does is he's always made the point that it's critical for your health,
yeah,
to socialize. It's more critical the older you get.
Sure it is.
Sure.
So
mm-hmm
you can't just ignore people.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find ways to socialize.
Look, when we have hardened criminals, murderers, rapists, sadists that we can't allow in society, and we put them in a prison with other murderers, sadists, and people that we don't want in society, what is the punishment that they fear the most? And that is isolation.
That's yeah it.
You
that's
take right them out of the population, you lock them up in a room by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the most horrible, and has been throughout history, by the way, the dungeons and the, when you really, really, really want to hurt somebody and nothing else changes their behavior, you lock them up by themselves. And here we have the politicians are trying to socially isolate the entire country.
One of our states, I can't remember, I think it's up in the Northeast or someplace, they've still locked their state down, and they had 16 deaths.
Yeah.
In the whole, I think it was Maine or something. I don't know. Don't trust that. But there's been an overreaction. You have to admit it.
Yeah.
Somebody has to admit it out loud that we cannot lockdown like this, that there are other consequences where the death numbers alone with suicides are skyrocketing.
Yeah, suicide rate is way, way up. And part of that is social isolation, and part of it is economic loss.
Yes.
You know,
oh,
I mean,
gosh,
money may not be the be-all and end-all, but it is important. Money is only unimportant if you have plenty of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if you don't have any, it's really important.
Right, yeah, right, right, right. And then, you know, the other sad aspect, which actually somebody pointed out to me, was that people who are prone to being abused are now stuck with the abusers. And so the risk of abuse is rising as well because they have no outlet. They can't get out to school. They can't get out to work. So they're stuck at home. And unfortunately, we are seeing a death rate increase because of abuse as well.
So you take isolation all by itself,
yeah,
and that can be deadly in essence. It's not good for your health. But then when you add financial stress, relational stress, like you were just referring to, it just exacerbates things, and it's getting out of control.
When you lock couples up together, one of two things happen, and we're seeing both. Mm-hmm. There's either a baby boom.
Yes, we will see that too.
Or an increase in divorces.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
we're seeing both, I understand.
We're seeing both, that's right.
I have a very, very close friend who is a professional counselor. He told me that his whole industry is absolutely overwhelmed. Mm. It's exploding with a need for more counselors, completely exploding. The need for counseling.
Yeah, and then try doing that remotely or virtually. That's just terrible.
They're doing it. They're doing it.
Yeah. They're trying.
They're trying to do it. That's right. Well, that is a very, very sad thing. Mm-hmm. And so,
okay,
health.
We've had our downer.
Yes. Good.
Now, let's do something upbeat.
Yes,
well,
I agree.
Okay, now, well, okay, I was going to talk about aspirin.
Oh, that dear, might that's be, another downer.
That may be another downer. So give me an upper. Give me an upper. What? You're the boss. Come on.
Realize I'm the man that just spent an hour and 40 minutes yelling at AT&T this morning.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
So I came into work really in a feisty mood.
That can be frustrating. I don't care what you say. We have, I'll bet you, thousands of people listening to us right now who take a baby aspirin mm-hmm. every day.
Or a whole aspirin.
Or a whole aspirin, but, you know.
But, yeah, I mean, no, really. There are people with arthritic problems
mm-hmm.
that
right.
are taking mm-hmm. 4, 6, 8 adult aspirin a day. Unfortunately, what we have now had reported is a good-sized study that showed that with colorectal cancers, aspirin actually increases the rate of spread
yep.
and premature death.
This is kind of scary, again, because so many of our listeners are taking the baby aspirin.
Yeah.
I had mentioned what's so frustrating to me
yeah.
is that now that this news is out, that's a reality, it's going to take 10 years
yeah.
before traditional primary care physicians realize that's the case.
But that's a little bit different, Pete. What you're talking about is the 81 milligram aspirin mm-hmm. that was taken for prevention
right.
of stroke and mm-hmm. coronary artery disease. And that three studies basically proved last year and before that, that is no longer necessary in patients who do not have a predisposing coronary artery disease risk or a stroke risk. So if you do take a baby aspirin to prevent the first stroke and you don't have any underlying coronary artery disease, then you shouldn't take it because the risk for a bleed or gastric disease is much higher with that. And especially if you're 70 or over and you don't have any coronary artery disease, please don't take it because it's going to cause more side effects than harm. 6.6 million people will have side effects from that medication alone.
What's a side effect?
GI bleeds, and that can put you in the hospital. So if you have a gastric bleed, you become anemic, you're tired, you're fatigued, you don't have energy, you have dark, tarry stools. And then when they scope you, they find that you have penetrating ulcers that can cause bleeding. And those, if they penetrate too far, they can even cause other medical problems, urgent medical problems. So that's something to be very careful about. But if you do have coronary artery disease, and in that case, you're put on an aspirin, then an aspirin is good because it will reduce your risk for a stroke or a heart attack because its function is to stop platelet aggregation. So it doesn't allow the platelets to adhere together and it won't make a clot. So for that reason, yes, you can take it, but not for primary prevention. And what Dr. Mixon was talking about was that increased side effect for people who are taking it for other reasons like inflammation. So if you have headaches or pain anywhere and you're taking large doses of aspirin, the studies are now showing that it increased the risk for colorectal cancers. So be careful with your choice of medications because the side effect profile is huge, with some that we thought were safe. And actually, it was sad reading those articles because it was like, you know, you wanted this cheap, effective drug to work, but clearly the side effects far outweigh the benefits in certain population groups right now.
Yeah. Another reason that if you're not a patient at Longevity Medical Clinic, you absolutely have to be listening to this show every Saturday because this is where you'll get this kind of information. But just think of the benefits of being a patient.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my golly. So cool. All right. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go to a break just a little bit early, a minute or so. And when we come back, we'll hopefully start taking some calls. We've got John from Tacoma who has a question about vitamin D and maybe the relationship with COVID-19. Not sure about that, but we'll go to John when we come back. If you have a question for either Dr. Mixon or Dr. Umat, well, here's the number. We got three lines open, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Hey, don't go far.
Our memory program is working.
Yeah, hey, and just as a little tidbit of information from the past, for years we used to have to drive into Seattle and go to the stations. Now we just build a nice little studio here the corporate office.
I wouldn't go into Seattle unless I can put a machine gun mount on my car.
How true.
I mean, they want to get rid of all the police and import all the druggies on the planet. So, you know, nobody should ever go to Seattle unarmed.
It is getting that way. It is something else. Hey, listen, you are learning things here on this radio show that honestly you don't get anywhere else. But think of being a patient at Longevity. See, we still want you to have, right, Jerry? All of our patients are actually kind of required to have their own general practitioner.
Yes.
We don't replace your GP.
No, let me, their own primary care physician.
Good.
Some people use an internist. Women use a gynecologist. You're right. It doesn't have to be a family physician.
Got it.
Okay. But you do need to have a primary care physician that takes care of your routine care. Because if you get bronchitis or sprain your ankle, we don't do that.
No, that's right.
You know, we're a specialty clinic. We treat the normal but undesired changes of aging. That's all we treat.
We're the ultimate preventive medical
clinic. Yes.
Clinic. Yes. But the reason I bring this up is we've had this sort of amazing thing happen at Longevity due to the pandemic. All of the people that have been listening to the radio show for maybe some of them over 20 years are starting to realize there's never been a better time to get serious about their health.
Mm-hmm.
And we had made the free health analysis appointments available almost 2 years now. Well, when the pandemic hit, things got real quiet around here because people were in kind of shock. And then they started waking up and saying, I desperately need Longevity. Well, we're still making the free health analysis appointments available. But they're kind of hard to find. And so thanks to Longevity's management teams, we've done some readjustment. We're growing. We've never been this busy. But we decided that we're going to make enough health analysis appointments available so that we are actually kind of doubling down and growing. So here's the deal. The only problem we're having is that now we're nearly full and will be soon, even all through September. Right now, however, we have in Kirkland, we have 24 available, Tacoma 19, and Linwood 22. But that's because I had to open all the way through September 25th. So if you would like one of the free health analysis appointments, this is the highest number of health analysis appointments because we've been making this shift. So if you'd like one, and then what we did is we doubled down on sort of that little incentive. We are now not only giving the $100 of free supplements, longevity supplements, we're actually giving you a choice. You can either have the $100 of free longevity supplements if you come in September, or you can get our two fitness books, which we've written here. They're wonderful. And our exercise bands that are really cool. Really cool. High quality bands. That's almost $100 value there. So when you make a free health analysis appointments and you come in, you not only get the two free tests, the blood test, and then of course the special in-body test, you get those two, but you have your choice. You can get the $100 of supplements, or you can get the two exercise books, fitness books, really, and the exercise bands as you are sequestered at home or wherever you are. So pretty cool. And so now is the time to act. We're not even doing any advertising during the week anymore for the health analysis appointments. I don't think we have for 2-3 months now, because people from this radio show right here, at least that's the way it is for now, are grabbing up all of those free appointments. I encourage you, grab one now. The sooner, the better. I'm afraid you're going to have to wait probably 2-3 weeks before one is available. But again, I've opened them up through September 25th. So now is the time you want to go, because, hey, first come, first serve. That's the way it is. It just has to be that way. To make an appointment, you do it online at lmclinic.com. lmclinic.com. You just simply push the button when you go to the homepage there. You'll see it. And it's an easy, easy, like a 2-3-step process that anybody can do, I promise. Now, if you don't have a computer, and about 6-8% of you do not, that's okay. You can call 866-86-YOUNG. 866-86-YOUNG. Either way, do it. You will be so glad you did, I promise. I promise. All right, let's go to Tacoma and talk to John. John, welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, on the radio, it's been a while ago. I heard something mentioned about vitamin D perhaps being preventative or aiding in dealing with the symptoms of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Can you help me out here?
Well, it's an observational study. It just shows there seems to be a clear correlation between serum hydroxy or 25-hydroxy vitamin D levels and decreased incidence of active COVID infections. So people with higher 25-hydroxy vitamin D levels tend not to get as sick or get sick as often. Now, whether that's the vitamin D that is protecting them, or the fact that they're making more vitamin D from being in the outside in the sunshine more, or, you know, some other thing that correlates with a high vitamin D, we aren't sure. But it is a well studied phenomena that people with higher central vitamin D levels are doing better. The question is why. Is it the vitamin D itself, or are there other things that, you know, that correlate better? We always have to be careful with correlation versus causation, because something correlates doesn't mean it caused it. And let me give you my favorite example. Okay. And this is in California. Ice cream consumption correlates with shark bites. The more ice cream that is sold, the higher the incidence of people being attacked by sharks off the coast of California.
With that information, the governor's going to shut down the ice cream industry. I absolutely guarantee it.
That's right. So, you know, but nobody in their right mind believes that eating ice cream actually makes sharks attack other people. What it is that ice cream sales go up when the weather gets warmer. And when the weather gets warmer, more people go in the ocean. And when there are more people in the ocean, more of them get bit by sharks. Right. So correlation is not necessarily causation. You get the difference?
I do. Very clear.
Yeah.
What would you consider the optimal levels of vitamin D in a blood test?
That depends on the person and what parameters we're trying to follow. You get your ideal bone density once your 25-hydroxy vitamin D is over 60. Okay. So anything under 60, as it rises, there is a clear increase in bone density. So you get the strongest, toughest bones over 60. In younger people, cognitive function continues to improve until 25-hydroxy vitamin D gets over 100. But when you get up around 120, 150, you're getting into what we consider toxic ranges. So, yeah, there's also increased correlation with decreases in cancer. As your vitamin D levels rise, immune response tends to improve. And so there is a decrease in most infections, and there is a improvement in cancer survival. So if I were a cancer patient, of course, I'd want to run my 25-hydroxy vitamin D a little higher than I otherwise would. If I'm just a high risk for cancer, I would carry it. My personal target is a 25-hydroxy vitamin D between about 60 and 90. That's where I try to carry most of my active people. Does that answer your question?
Okay. It does. If I might ask one more about what is TMAO?
T-A-M-O.
No, T-M-A-O.
I don't know.
It's something that's supposed acronym. To be... I'm
Hang
sorry?
On a second. No,
Go ahead, ask it. Well, in relationship to what?
Heart attacks.
Yeah, there's an article here from Harvard Health about red meat and TMAO. And it basically, red meat raises your risk for heart disease because it is high in saturated fat, but also the substance produces a substance by its metabolism called trimethylamine N-oxide.
Ah, okay. All right.
That just slides right off the tongue.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Trimethylamine N-oxide, of course.
Well, good for you. Show off.
It's produced by the gut bacteria from choline and lecithin and L-carnitine-rich foods. So basically egg, dairy, and meat, red meat-producing foods.
And there was a couple of articles a year or so ago about L-carnitine, especially people taking carnitine supplements.
Uh-huh.
And the question was, would carnitine supplements, especially carnitine tartrate was what was used in the study, that might increase the risk of heart attacks. And so, yeah, the trimethylamines are a cardiovascular risk. Okay, I'm not familiar with using that abbreviation. I've just always referred to it as trimethylamines. Sorry. But, yeah, it's there is a correlation. And the question is it the red meat or is it the particular gut flora? You know, we're putting a whole lot of emphasis these days on your gastrointestinal biome, the mixture of bacteria in your bowel. And some people have a mixture of bacteria that do indeed raise the chemical levels as they are metabolizing your food and kicking out their own metabolic byproducts that can raise your risk for a lot of diseases. Cancers, heart disease, strokes. So it's a question of A, what are you putting in your gut? And B, what is in there that is metabolizing what you put in your gut? It kind of goes back to the question of cholesterol. Cholesterol of in and of itself is not bad. We have to have it to live. Cholesterol is critical for life. It is the mother hormone. It is involved in energy metabolism in your brain, in your muscles, in your bone, everywhere. but if you have high free radical levels in your system, if you have high insulin levels, if you have high sugar levels, if you have pro-inflammatory cytokines from increased abdominal fat or from a sedentary lifestyle, those things damage your LDL. And then the LDL, even though it's critical for life, once it's been damaged by any of those inflammatory factors, it becomes a inflammatory product that then forms the plaques that causes you to have a risk of increased ischemic disease or heart attacks or strokes. So two ways to approach that. One is to lower the amount of cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
The other is to change the milieu of your system so you don't have all that inflammation that is damaging the cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And either or both of those sorts of interventions lower your risk of heart attacks.
Mm.
Okay. Same sort of thing here. You can either change your diet or you change your bowel flora,
yeah,
or both.
Right.
So biology is complex. Human beings are not simple, this goes in, that goes out. We're very complex systems.
And with that, John, thanks for the call, but the music is playing. We've got to go to a break. So that opens up a line, by the way. If you have a question, 800-465-8770. When we come back, May in Puyallup has a question about Relief Factor for NMO. You're getting all kinds of letters. Yeah,
tell me what the chemicals are instead of the acronyms. I do better with the real name.
And then Robert from Poles Bowl has a question about lisinopril. And Jim from Bremerton has APOE test.
Okay, well, that one I know.
It's the alphabet day here on Leading Edge Medicine. We will be back. All right, about 35 minutes past the hour. Pete Talbot here. You are listening to Leading Edge Medicine, your answer for a confusing world that we live in. Boy, this has been, we started the show off talking about the importance of being social and the consequences of being locked down. They are serious. They are severe. Let's take another call. Let's go to Puyallup and talk to May. May, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, May.
I called a couple of weeks back, and I was asking you about NMO. My daughter has it, neuromyelitis.
Neuromyelitis optica, yes.
Yes.
I remember
what I
the
wanted
call.
To know, that the Relief Factor, I know, helps joints. Would it help with that? Because she's in pain constantly all the time with
I have
the nerves.
Absolutely no data. to answer
oh,
that.
Okay.
Relief Factor contains four things, each of which do affect inflammatory pathways in your metabolism. Neuromyelitis optica is an autoimmune disease. You know, she's basically attacking part of her own central nervous system. This particular manifestation shows up mostly in the eyes and in the spinal cord, so you end up with muscle weakness, pain, altered sensations and stuff. It would be one of those things that would be perhaps worth trying. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But
it won't hurt, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, this is a disease that is so rare that, nobody's got a great treatment. Nobody's got great answers for this disease. So, you know, if we've got things like Relief Factor that, you know, won't hurt, might give some degree of relief, I guess it's worth a try. But I have no idea if it'll help or not.
Yeah, the newer immunosuppressive drugs is what they're using currently.
Yeah.
And again, like you mentioned, it's such a rare disease that it's difficult. And the problem is that it comes and goes. So, it's not MS, but it's like MS in that it'll wax and wane.
It's frequently misdiagnosed as MS.
Exactly. Because it has both spinal symptoms of weakness and paralysis and pain in the lower extremities, along with visual symptoms of pain and loss of vision potentially. And so when patients go through some of the courses of the disease, rather, they can sometimes use corticosteroids for relief in the intermediate stages. But the standard of care currently are the more expensive, newer immunosuppressive drugs.
Yep. Because they do a far more potent job of suppressing immune response.
Mm-hmm. And one more quick question about aspirin. I have AFib, and my doctor put me on a full aspirin, so perhaps I shouldn't take it anymore. Think?
Well, again, I'm not going to tell you to disregard your cardiologist's recommendations. There are other drugs that can be used to decrease your risk of clotting.
Correct.
And since we
and I'm on Diltiazem already.
Okay, well, diltiazem is a calcium channel blocker, mm-hmm. and its job is to try to slow down your heart rate.
Yeah.
But it's not an anti-clotting agent.
Correct.
Okay. But there are several good anti-clotting agents out there that can be used. A lot of docs use aspirin because aspirin is dirt cheap.
Yes.
It's readily available. But we do now have a recent study showing that in older people that are high risk for colon cancers, and that's basically everybody over about 60, if you get a colon cancer, the aspirin will most likely increase your risk of it spreading early and aggressively growing and killing you. So, and if you don't have a colon cancer, that doesn't happen, obviously. But, you know, colon cancer hides, and it is a very common cancer in older Americans.
Yeah. And see, your atrial fibrillation, unfortunately, puts you at a higher risk for a stroke or a heart attack. So what you need is a drug that will prevent the blood clotting. And there are newer medications for that. They're just more expensive. But they do carry less side effects.
Right. So, you know, I talked to your cardiologist.
What are some of those?
What, the blood of aspirin use? Yeah.
No. What are the new drugs that are better than aspirin?
Oh, your Eliquis?
Eliquis is a biggie.
Yeah.
And the Eliquis is probably the most commonly prescribed one these days. It has a risk of inadvertent bleeding that is about one-fourth that of the Coumadin, the warfarin. Mm-hmm. So it's a,
that's a very nice drug. Me.
But it's, you know, it is hundreds of dollars a month as opposed to pennies for the aspirin.
Okay.
Which is why, you know, we traditionally use the cheapest thing that works. It's just that now this new study on colorectal cancer has kind of scared us a bit about the aspirin.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Hey. Take care. Thank you, May. Mm-hmm. You know, that reminds me, I told you this, I think, yesterday. I got a text from Dr. Reuben Maiden.
Yes.
And speaking of aspirin and cardiac issues and what have you, and he now has permission. During the pandemic, Evergreen Hospital would not let any of their doctors speak in public, talk to the press.
They afraid of the doctors saying?
Just that everyone's freaking out, every hospital freaking out, just whatever. But it's now been lifted as long as he comes on, which of course he would do, and make the point that this is his opinion, not the official position of the Evergreen Hospital.
Do you think perhaps some attorney somewhere pointed out the First Amendment to the hospital administration?
Kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes, the doctor can speak in public. It's his constitutional right. Now, as your employee, he may not be able to disrespect you in public. That's a whole different thing, you know. But you shouldn't be able to tell the doctor you can't speak. You can just say, if you're going to keep working for us, you can't say nasty things about us.
That's right. Which he would never have done.
Which he wouldn't do anyway. Reuben's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that would be my rule in our clinic. If I had an employee that went out and publicly and said nasty things about Dr. Umat, they'd never say it about me, of course.
Yes.
But if they said nasty things about Dr. Umat, I'd fire them.
Well, I have very, very kind thoughts about Reuben. Because thanks to him, I'm sitting here when I was on his table, a couple of the doctors assisting him didn't think I was getting off the table. Well, alive, that is, off the table. So I'm grateful. But he's been a friend of yours and somebody you respect.
Yes.
And especially in the field of cardiology. So
yes,
we'll get him on. And now that he's permitted to speak, I am going to get him on really soon. He may even be listening, Reuben. I'll be calling you here momentarily, practically, and we'll get you on here. Okay. Let's take another call. Let's go to Poulsbo. And that's not their first name, by the way, Poulsbo. That's the city. Let's talk to Robert. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I have a couple of doctors who have told me, being diabetic and being an older guy, that they're trying to protect my kidneys and they're giving me 2.5 milligrams of lisinopril a day. Is that good for my kidneys?
Correct.
That has been kind of the standard therapy for 15 years or more. Yeah, lisinopril has a protective effect on the kidneys of diabetics. Well established.
That's good. So is there anything else I should do? Because every time I deal with any doctors, they say, do you have a heart problem? I say, no. And I have to go, I have to explain all this, and it still doesn't get, when you mention lisinopril, you're kind of, you're going to a heart doctor next.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, lisinopril was originally developed as a blood pressure medication. So, you know, it's a good medication. It's been around forever and a day. You know?
And they're right to ask you that because diabetics traditionally are at a higher risk for cardiovascular disease as well.
Yeah, but 250% increase in risk of cardiovascular disease if you're a diabetic. So, yes, you know, we always look at diabetics carefully when it comes to their heart and their brain. Because, you know, dementia is much higher risk, strokes is much higher risk, heart attacks much higher risk. So, you know, diabetes is not just a sugar issue. It's a total body disease. So, yes,
right.
We want to protect your kidneys.
Okay, well, I try and keep my blood sugars under control, and my last A1C was 6.7.
Okay, higher than I like it, but... By most standards, they consider it to be a very good level.
Very good,
good
level. Yeah.
Are you insulin dependent or oral medications?
I do oral medication and I do have long acting insulin. The question I have is my doctor seems to think that my fasting blood sugar shouldn't be below 100, and I'm going, what?
Well, okay, let me see if I can explain that to you. When statistically, if you're using insulin and you're driving fasting sugars below 100, you get a significant increased risk of driving it too low, mm-hmm. and people go into hypoglycemic shock. You know, they get their sugar so low that they basically are shutting down their brain, they have seizures, and you can end up with permanent brain damage. So as a safety factor, they're saying if we're using something like insulin, we are not going to drive your sugar too low. And if we don't let it go below 100, we know it'll never get so low you're in crisis from hypoglycemia.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a way to do it perfectly, you know, in my perfect world, sure, I'd love it if every morning you woke up fasting with a blood sugar in the high 60s and low 70s. Because, you know, that would be doing the least damage to your system from excess sugar. But if we drive you that low, we're very likely to accidentally drive you even lower and get you in trouble. That's why the 100 is that safety cutoff. It's prevent the doctor from doing damage by mistake.
Yeah, and the likelihood, like you said, Jerry, is very high that that might happen. And also, if there's a sudden change and you suddenly drop so low, then also your body doesn't recognize that it's still normal because you're so used to higher levels that driving you into the lower normal range will cause side effects for you. And that was my first code that I attended, a hypoglycemic attack in the hospital was a code blue.
Yep.
So I'll never forget that. It happens quickly, it happens suddenly, and you go into a shock.
And the things that can get people in trouble are things they wouldn't think about. They skip a meal.
Yeah.
They have more exercise than usual. You know, there are any number of things that can cause that insulin to suddenly drive you lower than you had planned on. So, yeah, insulin is a wonderful, terrible drug. You know, it saves lives. It can destroy lives. It follows Dr. Mixon's first rule very, very, very well. Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. All right. Thank you for the call.
There you go. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate that. When we come back, we'll talk with Jim in Bremerton about APOE and the test. That will be interesting. That will be good. But we've got three lines open now. So call us with your question, 800-465-8770. But if you're starting to realize this is a very good time to get serious about your health, holy cow, grab one of our free health analysis appointments. We've opened them up all the way through September 25th. So, yes, we have some, in all three of our clinics, Tacoma, Linwood, Kirkland. But go now, because I predict that within about 10 days from now, we will be booked solid through September. A wonderful problem for us, not so good for you, unless you go now to lmclinic.com. Make that appointment. You'll be glad you did. Oh, and yes, now you have a choice as sort of a free incentive, either $100 of free longevity supplements or the two fitness books and our fitness bands. You'll love them. You'll love them. Your choice. LM Clinic.
Republican convention next week, so it should go.
Hopefully there'll be a lot more entertainment.
Here we go. Hey, welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour, Pete Talbot here, and you are listening. If you're just driving down the street or turning on the radio at home and by mistake, you're here. Well, this is Leading Edge Medicine.
It's not a mistake. That's serendipity.
Yes.
The universe is smiling on you.
How true. This program is sponsored, of course, by Longevity Medical Clinic. And if you want more information about what we do here, this is sounding interesting to you, you can always go to our website, lmclinic.com. One reason I suggest you do that, even if you've been listening for 20 years, you can watch some of the videos on there. We don't talk enough about those, but they are wonderful. There's two in particular. The latest one is called The Two Stages of Aging. We don't have time to go into it all right now, but trust me, oh my golly, you want to watch that. Of course, the basic one, if you're really new to us and longevity, watch The Introduction to Longevity. It's wonderful, wonderful. You can watch both of those and some other ones at lmclinic.com. Oh, and I forgot to give the toll-free number. If you don't have a computer and you still want one of the free health analysis appointments, you can call and make your appointment by calling 866-86-YOUNG. 866-86-YOUNG. Bremerton is where we're headed. Jim, we're glad you called.
Well, hi. I took that, Dr. Mixon. I took your APOE test. It turned out fine. E3. So will my siblings, my sister and my brothers, will they also have an E3 automatically?
Not necessarily, no.
Let's pull way back here.
Okay. Most of the audience has no idea what you're talking about, so let me see if I can explain. APO epsilon testing is a genetic test that tells us about your risk factor for a variety of conditions. And you get two different APO epsilon genes. You get one from your mother and one from your father. Now, you can be a 2 or a 2-2 or a 2-3 or a 2-4 or a 3-2 or a 3-3 or a 3-4 or a 4-2-4-3-4-4.
They get the idea, Jerry. Yeah.
So
I'm glad you said that.
So what happens is, epsilon 3 is kind of a mid-range test. Epsilon 3 is the most common.
That's me.
And it is me. And it means that our risk of Alzheimer's disease and cardiovascular disease is about the statistical average. So our lifestyle still impacts dramatically whether or not we become demented.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a 4-4, you have a 50-50 chance of being demented by age 60.
Oh, my.
So that's kind of a scary one. So, and if you have just a single 4, if you're a 4-3, you know, then you have an increased risk, but it's not up to 50%. It's about a 30% chance of dementia. So you do want to be cognizant of what your numbers are.
But there is good news associated with that.
Even a 4-4... You have to remember, a 4-4 says you have a 50% risk of being demented, but it also means you have a 50% chance of not being demented.
That's right.
You have the same gene. What makes the difference in dementia and not dementia is lifestyle. by changing your lifestyle, your diet, your exercise, the inflammatory factors, by evaluating for things such as heavy metal intoxications, we can reduce your risk of Alzheimer's by 80%.
That is such a dramatic statement.
Mm-hmm. We can take a person that has a 50% risk of becoming demented and reduce it to a 10% risk.
Right. And what that means is that we reduce the likelihood of expression of that gene that you carry for dementia.
But here's the deal. For decades, maybe generations, Americans think, or maybe everyone worldwide thinks, well, if I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it. There's nothing I can do.
But there are things you can do. And that's the critical. And that's why we run the test. We want to identify people that are at high risk so we can intervene so they don't get it.
That's right.
Well, so we should tell all of our listeners right now, go to your primary care physician and ask them to do this test.
No.
I love asking questions like that.
and it's a legal question. If you go and your primary care physician does this test, it is on your medical record. And under the current law, everybody with any interest in your health bills has access to the record. If your primary care doctor has done your test and you have an epsilon 4 result, it will go to your insurance company, and you will never be able to buy long-term care insurance. They will never sell it to you. So, you know, the attorneys say never do the test, because if you do the test, the insurance company will know, and that means you're out of luck when it ever comes to getting coverage for your eventual nursing home. So, yeah, you got a 50% chance of getting demented, and your family's going to go broke because no one will insure you. On the other hand, if you come to us, we don't do insurance, which means your test results are between you and me. And unless you tell us to tell someone, we tell no one anything about your health. We are one of the few clinics left in America that has real patient confidentiality.
Truly, truly. Actually, my tongue-in-cheek question was actually more pointed to the fact that I don't know that many primary care physicians would ever think of doing
that. Yeah, I knew that that's where you were going.
Yeah, but I mean, even if he would, your attorneys will tell you don't, because you do not want that on an insurance available record.
Yeah.
And how many of our patients at Longevity have it done?
The vast majority.
Yeah, we do it on virtually everybody, unless they tell us for some reason no.
Yes.
But it is our standard default. We do it. But again, we are one of those rare clinics where it's truly confidential.
Yeah.
And the critical part of it is, back to this, it's almost embarrassing to say it again, if you don't measure, you don't know.
And if you don't know, you can't.
What are you
going to
do?
Prevent it.
That's
you
right.
can't prevent it. You're stuck.
Right. And so to answer your question, sir, if you have an APOE3-3 combination, it doesn't mean that your siblings will have the same combination. If your family has a history of dementia, then maybe somebody there did inherit an APOE3-4 combination or a 4-4. So it depends upon your family history. And sometimes, even if they didn't express it, if there was some likelihood then that anybody in your siblings could carry that gene.
So your parents, your mother or your father, could they both have a 3 because you got a 3 from each one.
Right.
But they could be a 4-3 or a 2-3.
Hey, and with the music, sorry about this, Jim, we got to go. But keep listening. Keep listening. And we got to go because we've got a legal responsibility to do a top-of-the-hour break. Station ID. It's required by law. But when we're done with that, which takes about 15 seconds, we will be right back with our number 2 of Leading Edge Medicine. So don't go far. We'll be right back, and you can call us if you've got a question in the meantime for Dr. Mixon or Dr. Umat at 800-465-8770. And if you want to make one of the free health analysis appointments and take your choice of those 2 free gifts, $100 of supplements or the 2 fitness books, and the bands, the exercise bands, go to lmclinic.com. Make the appointment.